Let's take our Bibles and this morning turn to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Deuteronomy chapter 5, and I want to read just verse 16. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 16, it says, "Honor thy father and thy mother, as Yahweh thy God has commanded thee, that thy days may be prolonged, and that it may go well with thee in the land which Yahweh thy God giveth thee." Since the fifth commandment is essentially about parenting, I thought that the following, which was carried in Focus on the Family's latest edition of their magazine, was apropos. And some of you may have already read it. I got it just a day or two ago. But I thought it was apropos. It's from an article entitled, "Don't Let Your Baby Drive You Apart," by Rob Parsons. He began his article by declaring, "I have sympathy for the person who said, insanity is hereditary. You get it from your kids." And then a little bit later, he wrote this. He said, "For those of you who don't have children, author and lecturer Colin Bowles has devised 12 simple tests to see if you're really ready for parenting. Here are three of them. First one is growing constraints. Women, to prepare for pregnancy, put on a maternity dress and stick a beanbag down the front. Leave it there for 9 months, adding a few beans every day to increase its size and weight. After 9 months, take off the beanbag and carry it with you everywhere you go. Men, to prepare for paternity, go to the local pharmacy, tip the contents of your wallet onto the counter, and tell the pharmacist to help himself. Then go to the supermarket, arrange to have your salary paid directly to its head office. Go home, pick up the paper, and read it for the last time. Another one, interior decorating. Can you stand the mess that children make? To find out, first smear peanut butter on the sofa and jelly on the curtains. Hide a fish stick behind the stereo and leave it there all summer. Stick your fingers in the flower beds and then rub them on the clean walls. Cover the stains with crayon. How does that look?" And then lastly, he quotes manic mealtimes. "Hollow out a melon, make a small hole in the side, suspend it from the ceiling, and swing it from side to side. Now get a bowl of soggy cereal and attempt to spoon it into the swaying melon while making airplane noises. Continue until half the cereal is gone, tip the rest into your lap, making sure that a lot of it falls on the floor. Now you are ready to feed a 12-month-old baby." I'd like to see what the other nine were as well. It kind of makes you want to get a hold of it. Well, of course, there's a lot more to parenting than what I just read to you. But, you know, regrettably, there's many young couples who prior to beginning their families don't give the responsibilities of parenthood any more thought than what we just gave those parodies. And that's sad, because there's so much that could be prepared for in parenting that regrettably either the young couple themselves have not even thought about, or what's even more regrettable is that their parents haven't prepared and taught them as well. It's just like everybody just lets the ball drop along the way somewhere and just says, "It's your job. I already did my job, so it's now your job, and you just do the best you can." There used to be a time with our people when we trained our children, when the young girls were trained how to be submissive, honoring, husband-honoring wives, and where young boys were taught how to love their wives and how to prepare them. They were prepared to be the parents of young children. It's just like, for the most part, it's just completely been left behind us. Without question, the toughest job, the toughest and most consequential job, the truth be known, an adult will ever face is that of raising a child. Even more, when you think about it, it is a bigger job. As big a job as it is for a husband to learn how to live with his wife and for a wife to learn how to live with her husband in harmony. I mean, anybody can live together, but in harmony it's quite a job. As big as that is, it does not compare, I'm convinced, with how big the job is and how consequential the job is of raising a child. And yet in some cases it's given as much forethought as the purchase of a family pet with some children, with probably most young couples in today's society, if the truth be known. Following on the heels, after quoting the Fifth Commandment, the Apostle Paul admonished the Ephesians fathers to, quote, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, Ephesians 6:4. You know, as tough as the first part of that admonition is for fathers, that is, of not provoking your children to wrath, the latter part of that is even more challenging. Every child not only deserves to be housed and clothed, to be raised in a clean and healthy environment, to be properly educated, but they also deserve to be brought up in the Lord. No, there's no greater privilege than to have parents who serve the Lord with all their hearts, soul, minds, and strength, and to bring their children up. They are the most privileged children that there are, and every child deserves that. It's just regrettable that very few will actually receive that, even as it should be in most Christian homes, or at least most homes that consider themselves Christian in America today. They deserve to be instructed in the Lord, instructed in the knowledge of Yahweh, educated in His principles and precepts, disciplined in His commandments and statutes. Now, if you want to do something monumental with your life, and who doesn't? You know, who living today doesn't want to do something monumental with their life? I think even the bum on the street, if he could figure out how to get out of the state that he's in, would really prefer, maybe not in all cases, but would love to get out of that situation and do something monumental in his life. And everybody's looking, you know, who knows beyond where, up into the skies, up into the atmosphere, trying to figure out where it is that I can do something monumental. Well, if you want to do something monumental with your life, accept the challenge of simply nurturing and admonishing your children in the Lord. That is monumental, and that is a challenge I'll give to you. Of course, one of the most crucial ingredients of that is instructing them in the Fifth Commandment. Plato, in his Laws, wrote this. Of the honor that must be paid to parents, it comes second only to the honor that must be paid to the gods. Of course, that's not that far different from what I've shared with you previously. It only comes second to what is the honor that is due Yahweh. Going on, it says, every honest man, he says, pays his debts, and there is no debt so primary, so essential, and so universal as the debt which every child owes to every parent for the love and care which gave him life and which preserved his life. End of quote. The previous two messages, I discussed the three Fifth Commandment statutes of fear, listening, and obedience. Concerning listening, or more precisely that gazed over look that children sometimes wear that I spoke of last week, following last week's message, my children reminded me of something a mother of one of their friends had shared with Linda shortly after they moved into the neighborhood. She had told Linda that at one point that she and her husband had become so concerned for their little boy that they took him to the doctor to have his hearing checked out, only to find out, only to be told that they had an everyday, run-of-the-mill little boy. He could hear perfectly. A normal boy who just needed his parents to get his attention first before proceeding with instruction. I would have fit in much better in last week's message, but I didn't want to leave that out because we got such a kick out of her calling us and letting us know that they were sure that he had to have had a hearing problem. He had no hearing problem whatsoever and still doesn't to this day, although he may still be having the same problem. I understand that situation. I never thought that it was a hearing problem, but I can understand children why some parents would think that their children do have a hearing problem. Well, with that, let's look at another fifth commandment statute. Turning back, or hopefully you've kept your place, Deuteronomy chapter 27 in this case. Deuteronomy chapter 27 and verse 16, where it says, "Cursed is he that setteth light by his father or his mother, and all the people shall say, Amen." Now it says, cursed is he who setteth light by his father or his mother. What does that mean to setteth light? One of those archaic King James terms. Young's Literal translates it as who is making light of his parents. NASB uses the word dishonor. Sarah Fenton uses the word insult. The New Berkeley Version translates it as despises, and the New English Bible has it who slights his mother and father. The Hebrew word, kalah, literally means to hold in contempt. Now, there are children who would never think of robbing or physically harming their parents, but who are cursed nonetheless, according to Deuteronomy 27 and verse 16, because they hold their parents in contempt. Now, somebody may want to respond to that and say, well, you know, cursing such a child, right? God would curse such a child and would even, you know, to the point, I mean, the emphasis there that he would have all the people say amen to it. And that seems just a little bit harsh, doesn't it? Well, it may to you, but it obviously doesn't to God. And isn't that what really matters? How God sees it, not necessarily how we see it. As a matter of fact, in God's eyes, such a person is just plain wicked. I mean, and that's such a common malady today amongst teenagers and adults. We always want to look, again, we have this tendency to take the fifth commandment and only look at it through the eyes of the parents of children who are still at home. There's as much contempt, if not more so, with children who have left home and grown up. Sometimes with people who are old enough where their parents have even passed on and they're still holding contempt against their parents. Still holding that grudge for something that either happened or was imagined as happening or that was blown out of proportion in their mind as happening years after it's happened. So it's just not a malady of teenagers, but certainly one that's there as well. But, I mean, we're talking about something that is, without question, a malady amongst our children. Children who wouldn't, again, think of maybe physically harming their parents, but who are cursed nonetheless. Who, again, are just plain wicked in God's sight. In Proverbs 18:3, Solomon tells us, when the wicked cometh, then cometh also contempt. Contempt is just something that goes hand in hand with the wicked. Now, why do you think Yahweh would consider a contemptuous person wicked? Where do you think contempt comes from? And no, I'm not going to tell you that the devil's to blame. That's not where I'm headed. Where do you think it comes from? What do you think is the root problem of contempt? Any ideas? How about pride or arrogance? Listen to Psalms 132:3-4. It says, David or whoever the psalmist is there, he says, "Have mercy upon us, O Yahweh, have mercy upon us." For, and then a little bit later, "Our soul is exceedingly filled with the scorning of those that are at ease and with the contempt of the proud." Or the arrogant. That's usually all it amounts to. It's just someone who thinks that they are better or more important than those whom they hold in contempt. A common malady, by the way, again, of teenagers, amongst others, who have not been taught how to honor their parents. That's all it is. That's why there's contempt there, because they've never been taught, /or disciplined how to honor their parents. Parents who have allowed their children to get away with it when they were young. And thus it becomes the common malady. Not only is such a person considered wicked in God's sight and cursed, but they are also, this is how serious it is, they are also someone whom God hates. Keeping in mind the root problem of the sin. You recall the proverb that enumerates for us the seven things which God hates most? Found in Proverbs 6, verses 16 through 19. Well, heading the list of those seven things is what the King James describes as a proud look. Or the New American Standard translates it as haughty eyes. Now, with that in mind, turn with me to Proverbs chapter 30. Proverbs chapter 30, and I want you to, as I read this to you, or as you read it with me, I want you to note especially the emphasis on the word eyes. Again, the New American Standard translates the item that heads the list of the things that God hates most as being haughty eyes. Now, so take note of the emphasis on the word eyes. Proverbs 30, and I want to read verses 11 through 13. Verse 11, it says, "There is a generation that curses their father and does not bless their mother. There is a generation that are pure in their own eyes and yet is not washed from their filthiness. There is a generation, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up." Now, what is the consequence of such eyes? Verse 17. "The eye that mocketh at his father and despises to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out, and the young eagles shall eat it." Let me tell you, to curse not thy, or excuse me, to despise not, or to hold not your parents in contempt, is a much more serious statute than one would maybe initially think. Matter of fact, as we're going to find out, and hopefully I've already discovered, but as we continue in this series in the next one or two messages, how many ever it takes to complete this, especially as we get into the judgment of God upon transgression of this commandment, we're going to see just how serious. I've tried to point out in the past how significant a commandment it is. We also need to see how serious it is to transgress either the commandment or the statute that explain it. The worst thing, probably, about contempt is that it often leads to more grievous offenses. Offenses such as cursing, robbing, and physical abuse, all of which are becoming more and more prevalent in the society that we live in today. More and more we hear of accounts of children, both young and old, who are robbing and physically abusing their parents, all of which are addressed in the next three Fifth Commandment statutes. Statutes of curse not, rob not, and strike not. Let's look at curse not. Returning to Leviticus chapter 20. And as you're turning there, let me just ask you, I want you to go back in your life. I'm not going to ask you to answer this to me, but I want you to answer it to yourself. Have you ever cursed one of your parents? Have you ever cursed one of your parents? Now, just how serious of a matter do you think that is? Or better put, how serious of a matter do you think cursing your parents is in Yahweh's sight? Well, let's find out. Leviticus chapter 20. Leviticus chapter 20, starting with verse 7. It says, "Sanctify yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am Yahweh your God." Verse 8, "And ye shall keep my statutes." Now I want to pause there just for a minute. I want you to note specifically the word statutes. This is one of the few times in the Old Testament when, as we continue here, when something is actually identified for us as being a statute. Now, it doesn't tell us, as is never done in the Old Testament, it doesn't tell us under which commandment it belongs, You know, God left some of this up just to our common sense. So, with that in mind, which commandment do you think thou shalt not curse, thou shalt curse not thy parents, would fall under? Well, the fifth commandment, obviously. That's where you'd be taken. I'm going through that to point out that's the only way we can determine what statutes belong under which commandments. And again, remembering that there are sometimes some crossovers. Certain statutes fit under more than one commandment. But that's how we determine. Some people would maybe wonder, well, how do you know that's a statute? Well, you kind of just read along and you figure out, well, obviously that's one that would belong under first, the third, the fifth, the seventh, or whatever commandment it happens to be. Continuing then with verse 8. Chapter 20, verse 8, "And ye shall keep my statutes and do them. I am Yahweh which sanctify you. For every one that curseth his father or his mother shall be..." Now, how serious of a commandment? How serious is cursing your parents? Verse 9 again, "For every one that curseth his father or his mother shall be surely put to death. He hath cursed his father or his mother, his blood shall be upon him." Children who have done so can count their lucky stars that a Christian civil body politic is not enforcing Yahweh's commandments, statutes, and specifically the judgment. And now I'm sure to somebody that's going to seem just absolutely inhumane. You mean to stone a child simply because he's cursed his parents? Or certainly as in the context of the Constitution, that's got to be absolutely cruel and unusual punishment, to stone a child for cursing his parents. Well, we'll discuss that when we later discuss the judgment for Fifth Amendment transgression. So hold on if that's your response to such a punishment. In the meantime, let's return to the statute, curse not. Plato also declared this. He goes on to say, quote, "And throughout all his life, a man must diligently observe reverence of speech towards his parents above all things." And a little bit later, "Wherefore the son must yield to his parents when they are wroth, and when they give rein to their wrath, either by word or by deed, he must pardon them, seeing that it is most natural for a father to be specially wroth when he deems that he has been wronged by his own son." End of that quote. Now, according to the Apostle Paul, fathers especially are to be careful to, quote, "provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged." End of quote, Colossians 3, verse 21. That's the second time, twice. God knew, he doesn't say mothers are to be careful not to provoke their children, because not that mothers can't, but that it's not as natural, or it's not going to happen as easily from mothers as it will with fathers. God knows this. You know, it's amazing. He knows. He emphasizes everything for the husband that he knows the husband needs to hear. You know how many times a wife is told to love her husband in the Scriptures? Not once directly. The older women are instructed to teach the younger women how to love your husband, but that's it. It's an indirect means. God knew, you know, wives just don't have the problem loving their husbands the way the husbands have loving their wives. Not that husbands don't love their wives, but in how to express it and how to make it a realized effect. And so, but at least three times, and in three different ways, God instructs husbands how to love their wives. You know how many times God instructs husbands to submit to their wives? Well, it's not one. That's not his authority structure, and so that's not a problem with husbands. Well, it shouldn't be a problem with husbands. But he goes into that. He knows that's what women are going to have a problem with. Nearly all, there are some exceptions, but nearly all women, I think probably all women to one extent or another, have problems in submitting to their husbands. And so God, over and time again, instructs women on how to and why they need to and in the way they need to submit to their wives. Same thing with fathers and their children. God knows that fathers are going to provoke their children to wrath much more than their mothers are. Right, children? It's just the way it is. And so he instructs twice. He tells fathers, be careful. Now I got to keep reminding myself of those passages. Be careful in your disciplining and how you discipline and your demands for perfection. Just don't cause them to become angry and wrathful. And I fail sometimes in that. I got to come back, I got to apologize, and I got to try it all over again. But twice he makes that clear to them, that they're not to do that. But, children of all ages, let me tell you, if they do provoke you, and they probably will from time to time, since that's just a common malady of parents, especially of fathers, that does not excuse you of speaking irreverently of your parents or cursing them for it. It is just no excuse. It's not like, well, if they do their job, common thing with husbands and wives, well, if my husband would be what he's supposed to be, I'd be what I'm supposed to be. Well, if my wife would be what she's supposed to be, I'd be what I was supposed to be. It doesn't work that way. God says, no matter what your wife is like, husband, you better do your job of loving her the way I love the church. And he says to the wives, no matter whether your husband loves you the way that she's supposed to, that you are to submit to him, even as unto the Lord, et cetera, et cetera. And the same with children. It does not, even if your father over and time and again causes you, provokes you to wrath, that does not excuse you of either speaking irreverently of them or cursing them. It just simply does not work that way. And when you get to their age, let me guarantee you, you'll discover how difficult it is to not provoke your children to anger. You try living with a creature that has foolishness bound up in their heart. It's just plumb difficult. It's a training program for the parents as much as it is for the children. And in the meantime, you are to bear up with even what you consider unjust and maybe even cruel or harsh. You are to bear up under that. And again, I'm speaking to all ages here because there is no age difference. I mean, we all can have this problem with our parents. You might want to consider again 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 18 through 20, which, by the way, applies to anyone under authority, whether it be servants, employees, wives, or children. There's instruction for us on there on how we are to submit to authority under even the worst of circumstances. In the Sermon on the Mount, for example, Yeshua proclaimed, he said, "Bless them that curse you and pray for them which despitefully use you." Luke chapter 6 and verse 28. In Romans 12 and verse 14, the Apostle Paul admonishes us, "Bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not." Now, if that's how our enemies are to be treated by us, how much more so our parents? Even if they have been bad parents. I'm not making excuses for a parent who would demand or try to coerce you into something that's ungodly. But, you know, we're all good. And we're all bad to some degree. And you can make a case for the bad in your parents to some degree or another. But God says that if we're to treat our enemies that way, then certainly God would expect us to treat our parents in the right manner. In a sense, the promise given to Abraham in Genesis 12 is extended to our parents as well. Those who bless their parents are likely to be blessed, whereas those who curse their parents, let me tell you, will be Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 20, it says, "Whoso curses his father or his mother, his lamp shall be put out in a pure darkness." You see, we may not have a Christian civil body politic enforcing God's judgment today, but that does not mean that the punishment for such sins still will not be meted out at the hands of God. Let's go on to rob not. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 19. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 26, where we find this. It says, "He that wasteth his father and chaseth away his mother is a son that causes shame and bringeth reproach." Again, it says that he that wasteth his father. What do you think that means? Well, when not translated wasteth, The Hebrew word shadad is most often translated in the King James Version as spoileth. He that spoileth, in other words, he that spoileth his father. The NIV translates Proverbs 19:26a as he who robs his father. And then later, as a result, is a son who brings shame and disgrace. So we're talking about robbing, the wasting, the spoiling of one's father. Proverbs 28:24 says, whoso robbeth his father or his mother and saith it is no transgression, the same is the companion of a destroyer. You know, after all, it's just my parents. You know, it's not really stealing at all when it's them. Or, you know, it's going to someday all be mine anyway, so what's the difference whether I get it now or later? Well, let's just call that for what it is. That's just justification for looting your parents. And isn't that what Proverbs 28:24 is talking about? Whoso robbeth his father or mother and saith it's no transgression is the companion of a destroyer. And Solomon tells us that such a person, as we read earlier, is a companion to a destroyer. Such a person may not outright destroy their parents, may not literally plunder or totally liquidate their parents' assets. They just do it on the installment plan. Little by little, until their parents are destitute and at the mercy of the government. Because the children, not only the parents, haven't fulfilled those responsibilities under them. The Pharisees, for example, came up with an ingenious way of getting around the wall. Of course, only ingenious to them, since there really is no getting around the law, is there? Since God knows the hearts of men and their motivations therein, doesn't he? They thought it was ingenious. But as we'll see, Christ saw right through it. You recall, I believe it was in the first message, concerning the significance of the first commandment, I pointed out that out of all the commandments and statutes that Yeshua could have used as an illustration regarding the Pharisees forsaking God's laws for their own statutes, that Yeshua chose to do so with the fifth commandment. Now, let's take a closer look at that incident at this time. Let's go to Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7, we'll begin with verse 1. It's a little bit lengthy here, but we're going to read the whole passage. Mark chapter 7, verse 1, it says, and then came together him the Pharisees, and certain of the scribes which came from Jerusalem, and when they saw some of his disciples eat bread with defiled, that is to say, with unwashed hands, they found fault. For the Pharisees and all the Judaites, except they wash their hands oft, eat not, holding the tradition of the elders. And when they come from the market, except they wash, they eat not, and many other things there be which they have received to hold, as the washing of cups and pots and brazen vessels and of tables. Now this wasn't just for the purpose of cleanliness or outside cleanliness. They made it a ceremonial thing that were part of their traditions. Verse 5, and the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, why walk not thy disciples according to the tradition of the elders? See, they'd lifted those traditions of the elders that came out of Babylon that eventually were codified into what we know now as the Talmud. They have lifted it right up to as equal with or even having precedence over the scriptures themselves, as we will see. And so they're saying, well, it was a major thing that they wouldn't be doing according to the tradition of the elders. Verse 6, he, speaking of Yeshua, answered and said unto them, well have Isaiah prophesied of you hypocrites, as it is written, this people honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Howbeit in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of God, you hold the tradition of men, as the washing of pots and cups and many other such like things ye do. And he said unto them, full well you reject the commandment of God, that you may keep your own tradition. For Moses said, and by the way, it's not all that much different in our modern-day churches today. It may not be the same traditions, and in some cases it is because it's Judeo-Christianity today, or what's better termed, Judaized Christianity today, Judaized, thus Talmudized. So in some cases it's even the same traditions that are found in our modern churches today, but even the churches themselves, outside of the Jewish traditions, have their own traditions that just simply are not found in the Bible. So don't think this is just a malady of or a problem with the first century Pharisees. And he says, and he said unto them full well, verse 9, you reject the commandment of God that you may keep your own tradition. For Moses said, honor, here, out of all the ones he could have used, again, he pulls out the fifth commandment. And he says, for Moses said, honor thy father and thy mother, and whoso curses father or mother, let him die the death. But ye say, if a man shall say to his father or mother, it is Corban. Corban was a term for a consecrated gift to the temple fund. That's what they were using. Now, and with that, you can maybe start to understand what they were trying to pull. It says, but ye say, if a man shall say to his father or mother, it is Corban, that is to say a gift, by whatsoever thou mightest be profited by me, he shall be free. Free, that is, free from the requirements of the fifth commandment. Verse 12, and you shall suffer him no more to do aught for his father or his mother, making the word of God of none effect through your tradition, which you have delivered, and many such like things do ye. Excuse me. The Pharisees were justifying their actions, or the lack thereof concerning their parents, by attempting to use their quote-unquote greater responsibility to God as justification for withholding from their parents what they could have been helped by. Or they were quote-unquote ingeniously simply plundering their parents under the pretense of giving it to God, if they were even doing that. And if they were indeed doing that, giving to God, they were simply taking what rightfully belonged to another. And we'll talk about that, this particular incident, more in a coming message, in the next message. But they were taking what rightfully belonged to another, in this case, to their parents, and using it as their tithe to God, if indeed they were even giving it. No, we've got this greater responsibility to God, so we can't fulfill this to our parents. No. The greater responsibility to God was their responsibility to their parents. Something that all children today, no matter the age, need to consider. You see, they thought they had gotten around Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 44. When in fact, Proverbs 28 verse 41 was actually written to them and any modern Pharisee who would come up with some quote-unquote ingenious plot or non-ingenious scheme in some cases in attempting to rob their parents, or who would shirk their God-given responsibilities to their parents as their children. Other than possibly being a God robber, you know, I can't think of very many things that I would consider lower and more despicable than someone who would steal from his own parents. And I can praise God with what I shared in the first message, the grace of God, and that Christ indeed comes into someone's life and can change and forgive the sins of the past. But really, when you think about it, how much lower can you get? Not that you can't get lower, but there aren't too many things that are much lower than stealing from your parents, especially as an adult, which we find to be the case more and more today. And in some cases, they're doing it, and in some cases,
other than those who would beat up their parents.
Another very serious matter before Yahweh. Consider Exodus 21:15, where it says, and he that smiteth his father or his mother shall be surely put to death. Something occurring much more frequently in today's society. Time and again, you find articles written about somebody actually beating their parents. Despise not, curse not, rob not, and strike not, all of which are obvious fifth commandment statutes. However, I do, in the remainder of this message and in the one to follow, I want to move on to what are possibly the not so obvious fifth commandment statutes. I don't know what to label this next statute other than to call it possibly the behavior or the lifestyle statute, and it probably actually belongs with obedience, but I decided to separate it from obedience because I wanted to give it a little bit more attention. Is it not true that one of the ways that we demonstrate honoring our parents is how we behave or how we live in society around us? Everything that we do as children, no matter how old we are, whether good or bad, is a reflection upon our parents. For example, when I see a kid, and I use that word, when I talk about my own children, I won't use kid because kids mean kids are the offspring of goats. And the goats are on the left, sheep are on the right. So mine are lambs. Don't call my children kids. They're lambs. But in this case, I use kids when I see a kid. And thankfully, some kids, by the grace of God, can become lambs. I was one of them. But in this case, in the state that we're talking about, when I see kids, children of goats, if you will, within the biblical context, with baggy pants and an earring dangling from their earlobe, you know, I think, you look at that kid, and you get disgusted, don't you? I do. You know who I get disgusted with? The parents of such a child. Not so much the child. And it's a dishonor to the parent, not the child. I nearly always think to myself, you know, what kind of parent would allow their child to dress like that? Let me remind you again, Proverbs 22 and verse 15, that foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. And for that reason, if for no other reason, I'll guarantee you, I will decide, not my child, what they will wear, and how he or she will wear their hair. Now, not that there may not be some compromising, not that there may not be that I'm going to do my best to allow them to wear things that they're going to be pleased with, but I'll guarantee you there's a line that they know right now that I will not cross over. They will never. Unless they want to have a split ear lobe, they will never, my sons will never wear an earring in their ear. They may wear it for a short time, but it'll only be for a short time, I'll guarantee, because that earring's not going to come out like they put it in. It's going to end up leaving a split ear. All that cruel and unusual or not, I'll guarantee you they aren't going to wear an earring, at least while they're underneath my roof. Foolishness is born up in the heart of the child. Why would I let them make decisions like that? That reflect upon their family and their lifestyle. And yet parents all the time are doing just that, letting their children manipulate them. And it's still the parents who are responsible because they were the ones who didn't decide what they were going to wear, just decided that the children could decide what they were going to wear. Don't swallow this cycle babble. That, you know, you're going to ruin your child. He's not going to be accepted in society with his peer group. Well, good thing. Probably, have you seen the rest of the peer group? Maybe it's a good thing that he's not going to be accepted in the peer group that he's usually going to be around. You know, I've taught my children, you're not to be followers. We named Derek because Derek means leader of the people. I said, I want you to be the leaders. I want you to set the standard, not be the followers of the standard everybody else sets, which is usually so low, you know, you trip over it, it sits on the ground so low. We're to be leaders, we're to be not the followers. Why shouldn't we? And I guarantee, because the children don't know sometimes how to do that at the early ages, that the parents of those children have to set the standard. Today's society, everything's turned upside down, where the children dictate to the parents what the standards will be. Not in my home and hopefully not in yours. Everything that we do reflects upon our parents. And for that person, if we choose to honor our parents, then that alone will dictate how we live. Or that we live as moral, upright, principled, virtuous, ethical, honest, scrupulous, exemplary citizens of God's kingdom. I got to emphasize God's kingdom, because in today's, if it wasn't God's kingdom, you know, what's exemplarily in God's kingdom and exemplarily as a citizen in the kingdom of this world are normally two different things. But if you're going to honor your parents, it's going to dictate that that's the kind of person that you're going to aim to be. Isn't that what Solomon was wanting to get across to his sons when he wrote, "My son, attend to my words, incline thine ear to my sayings, let them not depart from thine eyes, keep them in the midst of thine heart, for they are life unto those that find them, and health to all their flesh. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Put away from thee a forward mouth, and perverse lips, put far from thee. Let thine eyes look right on, and let thy eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand, nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil." End of quote, Proverbs 4, 22-27. If you think about it, the entire compilation of Solomon's Proverbs is essentially instructions on fifth commandment observance. It was a father instructing his child how to honor him and honor God. And if some of the younger parents who would hear this message, and especially, I might add, you fathers, because it's primarily your responsibility, want some ideas on where to begin a family devotion, I suggest that you do it starting with Proverbs. There couldn't be a better place of instruction, to find instruction for a child, because that's what Proverbs is. It's the instruction of a father to his son. Sons, by the way, that were already even grown. The words "my son" are employed by Solomon 23 times. How many knew that? 23 times in 31 chapters. And he says, "my son." Listen to some of the more general "my son" admonitions given by Solomon, actually to all of us. Proverbs 1:8, for example, he says, "My son, hear the instruction of the father and forsake the law of thy mother." Proverbs 3:1, where he says, "My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments." Proverbs 4:10, "Hear, O my son, and receive my sayings." Proverbs 4:20-21, "My son, attend to my words, incline thy ear unto my sayings. Let them not depart from thine eyes, keep them in the midst of thine heart." Proverbs 5:1, "My son, attend unto my wisdom, and bow thine ear to my understanding." Proverbs 6:20, "My son, keep thy father's commandments, and forsake not the law of thy mother." Proverbs 7:1-3, "My son, keep my words and lay up my commandments with thee. Keep my commandments and live, and my law is the apple of thine eye. Bind them upon thy fingers, write them upon the table of thine heart. The remaining "my son" admonitions concern areas of life that Solomon obviously felt warranted some more direct instruction, such as regarding the fear of Yahweh and godly authority, such as forsaking not Yahweh's discipline, the pursuit of wisdom and discretion, surety prohibition and alcohol abstinence, cautions against bad counselors, and warnings against running with the wrong crowd, such as with drunkards, gluttons, malcontents, and prostitutes. Other "my son" admonitions that got more specific. And then in closing this message, listen to some of the stated results from the book of Proverbs, of such fifth commandment observance again as provided to us by Solomon. Proverbs 1:9, it says, "For they, thy fathers, that is, thy father's instructions and the law of thy mother, shall be an ornament of grace, as we've shared in the past, under thy head, and chains, that is, of silver and gold, about thy neck." Proverbs 2:5, it says, "Then shalt thou understand the fear of Yahweh and find the knowledge of God." Again, a passage of verse I should have used in the very beginning. That link between the second and first tablets. You know, he says that if you teach your children how to honor you, that when they become old, they'll learn the fear. He says they'll come to understand the fear of Yahweh and find the knowledge of God. Proverbs 3:2, "For length of days and long life and peace shall they," that is, thy father's commandments, "add to thee." Proverbs 4:10, "And the years of thy life shall be many." Proverbs 4:22, "For they," that is, thy father's sayings, "are life to those that find them, and health to all their flesh." Proverbs 5:2, "That thou mayest regard discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge." And Proverbs 6:22, where it says, "And when thou goest, it," that is, thy father's commandments and the law of thy mother, "shall lead thee when thou sleepest, it shall keep thee, and when thou wakest, it shall talk with thee." End of quote. Now I'd say that honoring thy parents pays some pretty good dividends. You know what? it's never too late to start collecting on them or to start cashing in on them. Curse your parents, and you will be cursed. Bless your parents, both verbally and in the way that you live, and you will be blessed. Let's stand in the closing prayer. Heavenly Father, we're thankful, Lord, that you've given us our parents, Lord, those that you chose to give us life into this world. We're thankful for them, Father, and whatever good that they've been a part of our lives. And Father, we forgive them for their sins. We confess their sins as well, our fathers and our fathers' fathers' sins. Father, as we see so many in your word as they've done in the past, and ask that you'd break the cycle, Father, of the wrongs that they've committed, Father, in the lives of us and our children, that we can be cycle breakers, Father, through Christ our Lord, and especially that we can raise generations of children to come, future generations that will serve you, Father, be a part of taking dominion for your sake in this world. Let it be so. We praise you and glorify you for it. And ask you to be blessed.